Hello and welcome to another episode of Living with Endo, the A to Z of endometriosis. My name is Ellie Angel Mobbs, proud host of this podcast and ambassador for Endometriosis Australia. And this is all about creating a voice for those who battle this debilitating disease, including Libby McDowell. You're going to meet her in this episode, and she has got a story that we can all relate to. Since she was just 13, she was in debilitating pain and no one believed her. Sound familiar? She lived in agony. Based in Darwin, she travelled interstate to have her surgery, and she is a fantastic endo advocate in the NT, volunteering for us here at Endometriosis Australia over the years. She's got an amazing story which she'd love to share with you. Please enjoy our chat with Libby McDowell on Living with Endo, the A to Z of endometriosis.
Hi, how are you?
Are you a bit of a chatterbox like me?
Yes, yes. Mouth full of marbles.
But full of life and full of beans, given what you've been through when it comes to endometriosis. Over the years, you've been involved helping out as a volunteer in the Northern Territory for Endometriosis Australia, and you've also opened up and shared your story about everything that you have been through. So tell us, whereabouts in the world are you in this beautiful country?
I'm in Darwin in the NT. Beautiful, nice dry season weather. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Does the weather throw things around with your endo? It's totally off topic, but.
Yes.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, it does.
There you go.
Yeah.
There's a study that someone needs to do.
I'll be a candidate for it.
I'm putting my hand up as well. It's like when people say, oh, I can feel in my body when the rain's coming. And I'm like, what are you talking about? But I believe it's a thing. So, Libby, tell us about endometriosis. When did you first encounter this illness?
It must have been in 2016. I had horrible periods. I've always had horrible periods, but it was in 2016 when I had a miscarriage, and then I had trouble trying to have another baby. Oh, it might have been 2006. It was 2006, 2007, because then I had 10 years. I was lucky. I got an early diagnosis, and I only waited 6 weeks and had my first laparoscopy.
Wow.
And then that's where they discovered that I had endometriosis. But that really kicked off a tough journey. Like, I hear women say that it takes 10 years for them to get diagnosed. Well, it took me 10 years to seek the right help with the diagnosis. Even though we had a lovely gynecologist in Darwin, these other support networks that people have interstate, we haven't really had in the Northern Territory until now. So I really felt alone. Apart from the gynecologist, I felt alone with... I didn't know what was going on.
I'd love to touch on that a little bit later on for those endo patients who do deal with it in those regional areas and those places which are remote, which don't have the facilities like people do in the metropolitan markets. When they first mentioned the endometriosis word, were you like, what? What's that? Was it kind of like, this is a foreign thing? What does that even mean?
No, I actually knew what it was because my mum had endometriosis and my mum had mentioned it to me when I'd had my miscarriage. She thought that could be what it was. So I was lucky there. But my mum's story is quite different because she didn't have the chronic condition that mine eventually led down. She was in Melbourne at the time and was able to get some top care. So she had one laparoscopy. She was good. She got pregnant. And apart from having bad periods, they weren't horrific or life-changing like mine were.
It's interesting, the mother-daughter correlation, so common because my mum and I, we're exactly the same. And, you know, it's so common that you're hearing these stories now, and there's such a strong family link as well.
Yeah, and I have a twin sister, an identical twin, and for a very long time she didn't have endometriosis. She only got diagnosed in the last 4 years. So I was always intrigued at how come I had endo, I had all the chronic conditions and she didn't. To me, she just appeared to sail through life. It was later on in life that she got impacted.
Let's rewind to the early stage of Libby's life. You know, when you first got your period, did you find that the pain was straight away? When did things start to appear like, oh, this isn't right?
Yeah, I would have been 13 when I got my first period. I didn't even know that I was having my period. It was the pain. I felt like someone had stabbed me and went to the bathroom and then realised, oh, no, you know, this must be my period. And then after that, they were very irregular. They weren't consistent. My friends had started getting their periods and they were getting it every 28 days, whereas I might get it once every 6 weeks or 3 months. or I would have a period that lasted 6 weeks. So the GP had me on the pill at 13 to try and regulate my cycle.
13, and you get put onto the pill. It's a pretty drastic measure when you hear those words. Like, I suppose it was the norm because I was pretty similar to you, where they just go, here, take a pill and off you go. But
there has to be another way.
And so did you miss out on school times as well, or?
I did, but I never put it to my period. Like, I knew it was impacting me, but the connection I just didn't really make until I was in my early 20s when I started missing work, wasn't able to go to work, and I thought, oh, this is a problem.
Mm. And how did you handle that conversation with your workplace? Did you make up that there was something else going on?
No, I did initially, and then it wasn't long, and I was like, no, I don't care. I'm quite vocal in talking about that. I don't hold back because I knew it wasn't normal. And you do, people generalize their periods and that. And yeah, I just knew straight away I wasn't normal at all. I was using maternity pads and flooding in the office. Mm. No other woman did that.
In Darwin, you're going through those symptoms and you go to a GP. You then found a specialist who then, 6 weeks later, has you on the operating table doing the thing?
Yes. Yeah. And they found I had a significant size cyst on my ovary and they found endo on my bladder, but they said it was quite mild and that I would be okay.
Mm.
And so I spent 12 months under the care of that gynecologist trying to get pregnant and having fertility, but also trying to work out what was going on with my periods because they were quite heavy. I think 2 years after the first laparoscopy, I had a second one. And all they found at that stage was just an ovarian cyst and said that I didn't have endo. I trusted her, but I knew that wasn't the case. Yeah. I knew it was endo. You have that gut feeling.
You do. And then you second guess yourself.
Yeah.
It's like when you go and get a scan done and you know there's
right.
something there. There's something not normal because this pain cannot be right. And then we're like, oh, well, we can't say anything. It's like, well, yeah, but I'm not crazy. There's something going on. And so that was after your second laparoscopy.
Yeah. Yeah, that was in Darwin. That was with the same gynecologist. I love that gynecologist. She was pretty good. But then I pretty much had a monthly appointment with that gynecologist for quite some time. And she left Darwin. Mm. She went to Queensland. And I really struggled at that point once she left with trying to find a gynecologist that knew endometriosis. A lot of the gynecologists up here, the private ones, were obstetricians.
Mm.
And I couldn't, for the life of me, I couldn't get to the local hospital for their wait lists were so long. I felt like I wasn't being triaged. And that's when I sought help from Endometriosis Australia and was researching through their social media networks and their websites and seeing that there are gold standard treatments and there are experts interstate. And that's when I chose to travel to Queensland and I had big surgery. That was in 2016. And I was diagnosed with stage 4 endo and I was just riddled with it.
It breaks my heart that you've had to travel from Darwin, which is a big city. It's a capital city. So you've got to go
right.
to another big city to be able to get the treatment to be able to live your life.
Yep. It was pretty... It's heartbreaking that's what happened. And over the years, I've met a lot of women that are doing that, and they're still doing that. They're still traveling interstate to seek that gynae care.
So I could imagine because you've gone in as a private patient as well, because you would have to pay for the surgery, you'd have to pay for the travel to get to Brisbane, the accommodation while you're in Brisbane, the travel back to Brisbane. The aftercare, like that's a financially, not just emotionally, that is so much to take on.
Yeah, it was a huge burden that I had to wear.
Mm.
From 2015 to 2017, so 2 years, I had 10 different GPs. I had spent $20,000 on private medical care, just getting ultrasounds done and all that, MRIs. And that done, and then having to travel. I think the travel on top of that was another $10,000 that I spent to get to Queensland, and then the time I spent in Queensland having to book accommodation. And then, like, I didn't have car hire, but I had Uber and taxi fares and like that to get around to the hospitals.
Mm. And did you know anyone in Brisbane? In Queensland, when you get, you're all of a sudden you rock up here, it's like, I'm having big surgery. Do I know anyone?
Yeah, my ex-husband at the time, his family lived in Queensland,
Okay.
but they weren't in the CBD. So I did choose to stay in a hotel so that I was close to the hospital, because I didn't want to have complications or something like that and then not be near the hospital.
Wow. That's just so much to take on.
Yeah, it was. And I'd had my daughter at that stage, so she was a toddler and she stayed home in Darwin with my mum and dad and my sisters.
Wow.
Which made it tough.
That is just an emotional roller coaster for you, to be in a different city, your toddlers in another city, you know, in beautiful care with your mum and dad. But still, and then to have the surgery done and find out that you've got stage four, which is the worst that you can get. That just is so much to go through by yourself.
Yeah, and I suspected that it was going to be severe from the MRIs that happened before I travelled. The gynecologist was brilliant with organising local tests and things to be done here, and he'd organised for me to have a colonoscopy with a general surgeon because we suspected that I had endometriosis on the bowel. So I had to have that surgery. That happened a month before I travelled to Queensland. So it was full on at the time.
What did they discover? Yeah. I'm always amazed to discover, where did the endo get to in your body, if you don't mind sharing?
Where did it end up? They were going to do a bowel resection, but once they got in, they ended up just doing the bowel shave. So I was pretty lucky with that because I was expecting to have a ostomy bag.
Wow.
They found it in my pouch of Douglas. They found it inside my vaginal wall. I had it on my ovaries, my fallopian tube. I had it everywhere. Jeez. I was riddled. My whole pelvic region was riddled.
No wonder why you're in so much pain and you're having these irregular periods, but then the ones that went for so long, and it all kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was so grateful. I was so grateful that I had that surgery and that the gynecologist, he was wonderful. From the minute I walked into their office to have my first consult prior to the surgery, you know, I felt like people understood. They really understood the severity of the disease. And then after, I got probably a few weeks relief, and then my periods came back with a vengeance. And I thought, oh, we're not done. I was hoping for the miracle that I would be done and dusted, but I wasn't. And I had a period for 12 months that they couldn't stop. They put me on the depot injection that you get every 3 months. I was getting that monthly. And I had the Mirena inserted by a GP, and that expelled itself 2 weeks later. So I gave birth to that thing. That was worse than actually giving birth.
Wow, ouch.
And then I was on the pill as well. Oh. And it just wouldn't stop. So at that stage, I was going, like, I was just at my wit's end. And I went to Melbourne because I had family support. I've got more support in Melbourne than I did in Brisbane. And I went down there to see a gynecologist, and he recommended a total hysterectomy because I'd been through so much already. And it was quite clear that they couldn't stop the periods. And I was anemic and just led to a whole bunch of other issues.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's just, you'd be exhausted constantly if you've got anemia.
Yeah, I was. And I had a significant time off work. Normally when you have young children, you have time off work anyway because they're always sick. But if it wasn't my daughter that was sick, I was sick. And I think I must have had half a year off. I was lucky if I turned up to work once a week. So that was tough. And I spent 6 weeks in Melbourne recovering from the hysterectomy. And I wanted to have that done. I'd been asking for it, but it was still heartbreaking to be told that I had to have that done.
How old were you when they say to you?
I was 32.
It breaks my heart that that's something that can ease symptoms for people going through endo. Because I'm looking down the same path as well. And
yeah, I don't regret the decision. Like,
yeah,
my life is so much better since having it. But I'm still, to this day, I still live with the fact that I couldn't have another child. I always wanted to have a horde of kids. I always wanted 10 kids. I'm very lucky that I have one, but my life is better. But, and with that too, you know, in some areas it's not better because I still suffer from endometriosis. I still end up in emergency departments because I've had a ruptured cyst with that one ovary that I kept. Still gives me problems to this day. So it's not a cure. It's just made life easier.
Yeah. To fall pregnant with your beautiful bub, was that difficult for you? Did you have to look at fertility help?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I did. I went to the local IVF clinic here and they started me on Clomid to try and start the ovulating and all that.
Mm.
And that wasn't pleasant either because then that stimulated and I kept developing all these cysts on my ovaries. But I was very lucky we were looking down the path of having to do full-blown IVF. And somehow, in between treatment, I managed to naturally get pregnant.
Oh, wow. Your angels are looking down on you.
They were. And I tell my daughter to this day that she was found in the cabbage patch.
Oh, she sounds so beautiful. How old is she now?
10.
Do you fear that she's going to go through what you've been through?
Yes, I do. I do. And I think some days I think that it's already starting because she complains that she has an upset tummy and she can't explain it.
Right.
And according to the pediatrician, we're looking in the next 12 months that she'll start to have her period.
Wow.
With just the way that she's had a rapid growth in such a short period of time and she's already showing those preteen signs that, yeah, her period's on its way.
Mm. Have you mentioned, like, does she know what you've been through given that you've had all of these procedures done and this hospital time and this time off work, or does she just know mum's been sick?
No, she knows exactly. I've never shied away from trying to hide that from her because I am worried that that could be her destiny as well. And, yeah, so right from a little baby, she's understood that I've been unwell, and over time she's learnt more and more about endo.
Mm.
I think she must have been 3 or 4. She's come to all my doctor's appointments and that with me. And she has, I'm having a moment. I'm getting all emotional just talking about that. I had to teach her when I think she was 3 how to use my phone to ring a family member like my mum or dad.
Mm.
Or even how to ring 000 in case I needed an ambulance because I passed out on the floor in pain.
Oh, Libby, that breaks my heart so much. You don't want to put your kids through that.
No.
No.
And it was very difficult. It impacted me so much with the pain that I was on. I had like 9 different pain medications and that to try and just get through daily life.
Mm.
I relied a lot on my sisters and my mum to take my daughter out on outings, you know, like if they wanted to go to the wildlife park or to the park or to even to a kid's party, I needed help because I couldn't do that alone. I'd be in agony. And then if I did manage to get through an event, I would spend a week curled up on the floor.
You'd have to motivate yourself to go along to that event.
Like, yeah.
And build, you know, you have to, yeah, mm-hmm. Literally, it's like training to go to an event, so to speak, which seems ridiculous, but it's so true.
Yeah, and it is. And even that forward planning, like you get the invite and you're straight away looking at the calendar and it's like, no, I'm going to say no, I'm not going now because you know that your period is expected to be in that time frame and you just know that you won't make it.
Yeah, and because it does affect your social life so much and it can affect social groups as well. When you are constantly cancelling, and some people, they just don't understand, and then you'll just lose contact with them because like they'll go, oh, well, Libby or Ellie, they don't want to come because they're always sick. Like, you just get branded as that person. And it's just such a mind game, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's not fun.
So how are you feeling at the moment after everything that you've been through?
I'm feeling amazing because it's in the last couple of years that that Darwin has really excelled and we've got some services in Darwin now.
Mm.
I was able to get some support through the pain clinic at the hospital, at Royal Darwin Hospital.
Yeah, and this is one of many pain clinics.
That was a life changer.
Yeah.
Yeah, learning. I always thought I knew pain, not until I did that pain clinic that I really understood the science behind the pain. And then they helped with the strategies and how to not let the pain get the better of you, you know. I learned how to live with the pain. Even simple things of not trying to clean your entire house one day a week you know, pacing yourself. And I still, to this day, I still put in their strategies in place to help me get through. And life has been good. And now with the help of Mr. Luke Gosling getting funding for the Women's Health Clinic, we now have a one-stop shop that has GPs that know endometriosis. We have a pelvic physio there. We have a psychologist there. And so I've recently started accessing their services, and it's just wonderful. It's a game changer. Mm.
So this is one of the endometriosis and pelvic pain clinics that you're talking about in the Northern Territory. So this is in Coconut Grove,
yes.
Northside Health. And so yes. There's so many different services there that you've just mentioned. It's like a one-stop shop basically for everything you might need for going through endo.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And they're lovely. They're lovely ladies. And they understand. You walk in there and you feel like you don't even have to tell your story to them because they just know.
Doesn't that make a huge difference when you rewind to your past and what you've already been through to now, where it's like you walk in and it's just, oh, this weight's come off my shoulders because you just know.
Yep, yep. You're going to help me. You're going to validate how I'm feeling.
I did have this wonderful experience getting an internal ultrasound the other day, and aren't they just joyous? Not. You have to like psych yourself up for going in there. Met the beautiful technician. Her name was Felicity. And she's like, okay, just tell me a little bit about yourself. And I'm like, well, I've got endometriosis and I've got adenomyosis. She's like, oh my God, me too. And I'm like, high five.
Oh,
and then it's just like, I just wanted to hug her because she's gone, I know exactly what it's like. And I'll just take everything so slowly. And you just tell me, please, at any point when we need to stop, you stop. And it was just this moment of, oh, I found a friend in the most strangest of places where you're about to go with this internal camera and have a look. And it was just so refreshing having, you know, previously been in these environments where, you know, I've had, and no offense to the male technicians, but, well, they don't know what it's like, for starters.
No,
but
they don't.
But it's almost like they're question and doubt that there's anything there.
Yes.
So just to have
I've
moments.
Had them after the hysterectomy. I still have to have those ultrasounds done. And I've had one poor soul who couldn't find my ovary. So I took over and I found it. I was like, it's over here. It's up at my belly button.
I hope you put the bill through Medicare.
Yeah. I think I've had that. I've had so many of those things done. I know exactly where to put the probe.
So, look, you have been through such a harrowing experience with your endo, Libby, and, you know, you're through the thick of it all now and you're on the other side. You've been through it in a market where the services weren't available. Now is a different story. Let's rewind back to when you first were in Darwin and going through it all. What would be your piece of advice to someone who's in a similar scenario, where they're in a remote area or they haven't got the services that they need? What would be your big tip?
You know yourself better than anybody in the world. It doesn't matter whether they're a doctor or your mother. You know that something's not right, and you need to keep fighting and you need to keep going until you find somebody that will help and will understand and know. And don't take getting fobbed off by them. You know something's wrong. You know your own body, and when something's not right, that's right. It's not right. So keep fighting. Some people don't have a choice and they have to travel.
Yeah.
So I would fight. I would fight for that too, and get some support.
And and that's the thing too. In these remote areas, there's not as much support either. So how did you get that support network?
I did it alone. I really did. And I reached out to Luke. Something must have happened in Parliament. Yeah, I think he did a speech about endometriosis.
You're talking about Luke Gosling.
He's talking about it.
Yep, who is the member for your area, who's absolutely fabulous. I got to meet him a couple of times at Parliament, and he is so, so wonderful. He is all about championing endometriosis. So if you're in that area, then definitely he's the MP for Solomon, Luke Gosling. Send him an email, send him a letter, because he will just keep on fighting for us.
He will. And I just went and met with him and shared my story. And through Luke, I was able to meet other women that had endo. And that's when I kicked off wanting to help Endometriosis Australia and to volunteer, because I didn't want another woman to go through my journey. I wanted to help people not have to feel so isolated and alone.
it's such a lonesome thing to go through too. But, you know, things are changing, and because there are more vocal people like yourself, we've got these amazing people in Parliament like Luke who are helping to get the awareness out, and, you know, things are changing.
Yeah, things are changing.
We've got to keep I do
feel sorry for the people in the regional areas. I did spend 12 months living in a remote area, and they had a GP there and they had a hospital there, but I still didn't have the right care. And I actually couldn't stay there anymore. I had to move back to Darwin so that I could keep getting some support. You know, I could get an ultrasound in within a reasonable time and not have to wait.
Wow. So if someone's in that scenario, would you, like, it sounds like the only thing to do would be to move or to, yeah, to make that change, which is pretty drastic.
Yeah, it is. But I would just keep going to the local health clinics.
Mm.
They will. Sometimes I do wonder, you know, if more people know about it and go to the clinics and seeking help instead of just putting up with it and trying to self-medicate or try and get through it themselves, might expand some of the services out into those regional areas. Because I do know that in some places they might have, like, visiting specialists and that come. They might come more often if they realise that half the community has endo, or at least another women's health condition that they don't necessarily have to have endo, but they might have PCOS or something like that. And they might be able to bring the services to the women.
I find maybe it's a thing with the country people as well. My husband's from the country and he's very stoic, and so are his sisters, and they never want to admit that there's anything wrong. And it's also almost like, and I think it's a real Aussie thing as well, where we don't want to say anything's wrong. We'll just suck it up and we'll keep on going. But it's like, no, you need to be, you know, you need to start that conversation. Yeah. And it's not fair on you to be going through it.
No, or if you're going away on a holiday, because I know a lot of these regional areas, people do fly out to get some, you know, experience some real coffee, for example. When you plan your holiday, go and plan to see a specialist. Or another doctor or something like that, and test the water, see. Because I found that coming from interstate, when you have those conversations with these clinics, they're very accommodating and they will get you in. Like if you tell them, you know, I'm planning to be down in this time period, they will slot you in.
That's really good advice. Nor did I know that people will travel just to go and have a proper coffee if they haven't got it in their town.
I miss my coffee when I lived out there.
Libby, having been through so much, your big tips for someone who is going through a laparoscopy for the very first time?
Heat packs. Pack your heat pack. Yeah, pack some pads and some comfortable knickers. Even buy something that is the next size up, like really comfy pair of pyjamas, because you're going to be a bit bloated than that from the gas. But then I guess it depends too on how good your surgeon is, because after one of my laparoscopies, I didn't have that problem with gas. Mm. They managed to take it out when they closed me up. I don't know how they did that.
You're lucky. The gas is always a surprise when you get the shoulder pain. You're like, hang on.
I know. And pack multiple heat packs, because you're going to want one on your tummy and you want two on your shoulders.
Definitely make sure that the overnight bag is packed ready to go.
Yes, and a TENS machine. I wish I found a TENS machine. The lovely ladies at the new clinic, at the pelvic pain clinic, recommended a TENS machine to me, and I've bought that, and that has become my new best friend.
They are absolutely amazing, and there's some which are specifically targeted just for the pelvic area, so it means that you can wear them discreetly as well, and you can have them set on timers and stuff like that. But definitely can make a huge difference. I've noticed it as well. And if you have got private health, you can claim some of the money back as well, depending on your insurance. So definitely worth looking into a TENS machine, because as you mentioned, Libby, they are incredible.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Libby, for coming on this podcast. Your final piece of advice for our endo warriors listening, because you've really shared so much so far, but what's your final piece of advice for everyone listening?
Never give up. Never give up. And if you are a loved one of someone that has endometriosis, do some research and be that supportive person in their life, because they need you.
Well said. Absolutely agree 100% with you, Libby McDowell. one of the endo amazing volunteers from Darwin who has done some work for us over the years at Endometriosis Australia. And as you mentioned too, Luke Gosling, the MP for Solomon, get in contact with him so we can continue to see that women's healthcare just grow in Darwin and across the territory as well.
Thank you so much, Ellie.
Thank you again to the amazing Libby McDowell, who, a story we can all relate to, right? It's so harrowing what we do have to go through, us endo warriors. But this is where we would love to hear from you. So if you would like to share your story, then please get in contact with us. And maybe you would like to volunteer for us as well, just like Libby does, doing her thing for Endo Australia in the NT. You can get in contact with us on the website. It is endometriosisaustralia.org. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Living with Endo, the A to Z of endometriosis. Make sure you give it a like, 5 stars, share it around and let other endo warriors know that there's a podcast giving you a voice. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you feel well and you stay safe, and I cannot wait to chat to you soon. Bye.